the volume.
Colin Cowherd podcast presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. No better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. There's a lot of reasons. It's America's number one sportsbook. Incredibly easy to use. Super safe, totally secure, super fast payouts in as quick as 2 hours. You're not going to get that anywhere. Also, same game parlay bets, live betting. It's the best. Hey, if you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I did it in 15 seconds. Get started now. Sign up. Please use the promo code Colin so they know we sent you. Please use the promo code Colin, C-O-L-I-N. FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up. Hi, everybody. Nick Wright and I have a 40-minute conversation today. I think you're going to love it. So I'm not going to waste too much time before I get to it. I do want to comment on Sean Payton retiring. I was very vague about some things, and I don't like to be vague. I think I'm a pretty direct person, and I think you deserve that. I'm going to say this about Sean Payton. I have been told now by three different people, some in football, some in broadcasting, that Sean Payton is not going to coach for a year. What I would do, this is what I would do if I ran Fox Sports, and I have no insight to what my bosses are going to do because they wouldn't tell me. I would pay him $2.5 million a year if I was at Fox or NBC or CBS or ABC, and I would just pay him and get him in the building and figure out what to do with him once he's in the building. I think he's that talented. There is, by the way, a current professional athlete in America who is being paid about that much money, and he's still a vibrant player, but he's getting older. He's paid that much money by a network to not go to the other networks. So that's kind of my theory of what I would do with Sean Payton. I would just pay him if I was one of these networks, get him in the building, and figure the rest of it out later. I think he's that talented. But I have been told he's just burnt out. And, I mean, the last five exits for the Saints have been just full of tumult. And I think it's time. All right, I want to get into the Nick Wright stuff because, you know, Nick's not only works with me, he's one of my dearest friends, and I don't want to waste any of your time. And if you have a 40-minute drive somewhere, I think you're going to like this. All right, time to bring in my buddy Nick Wright. About once a month, the co-host of First Things First joins me. He's, you know, the co-host, but he runs that circus, and it is every bit of circus.
It's a good show. You know what? Oh, just real quick, because you and I haven't talked about this. I'm proud of the TV show right now.
Oh, it's great.
I think it's, you know, I've been doing it almost 5 years. I think it's the best it's been. I love working with the people I work with. I think everyone knows exactly their, like, has a lane for it. I think the show is really the best it's been. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to say how good I think my television show is.
It really is, because I listened on the way in. It's funny. I told you that when they put Chris Broussard on, your mutual affection for each other is so obvious, and it clarifies everybody else's lane. And I think it's, I listen to it every morning driving in, and it's one of the things it does. It makes me think. I disagree with a lot, but I don't care. You know, you and I don't care about that. Like, it makes me, yep. It jars my memory, or it makes something, you know, come to life.
Then can I ask you a question? Because I don't know what you have on the docket today, but one of the things I mentioned kind of in passing, but it seems like something that you actually probably, once it goes, starts rattling around your brain, can do more with than me, which is how much of a benefit or a negative is it actually to be in a bad division? There's a weird college football corollary to this that you can help me with, but let me lay it out first, okay?
Well, okay.
So the three biggest playoff disappointments this season, one and done home losses, Cowboys, Titans, Packers. The three worst divisions in football, NFC East, AFC South, NFC North. Conversely, who is left? Two from the NFC West, the best division in football. One from the AFC North, the second best division in football. And one from the AFC West, the third best division in football. Is there an element of, if you are in one of these soft divisions, you better be buttoned up, incredibly well coached, find ways to challenge yourself throughout the year, or else what happened to Mike McCarthy a bunch in Green Bay when the NFC North was bad happens to him in Dallas, and now is happening in Green Bay again. Like that there is, we look at it, oh, you're in a bad division. You can get the bye, you can get the onesie, you can get home. But is it maybe a detriment as opposed to fighting through the fire the way the NFC West teams had, the way the Chiefs had to?
So the first thing off the top of my head is, how are all four games decided this weekend? Situational football.
Yep.
When you play in close games throughout the season, I mean, Jesus, how many close games were the Chiefs in? Now, the Raider games were a break. But you play in situational football with massive urgency throughout the course of the season. So the Rams appeared incredibly comfortable as they took the ball with 44 seconds and no timeouts. And
to go. The Niners have been fighting for their lives for 6 weeks.
Yep.
For 6 weeks, they've been fighting for their lives. So they're not, when they can't get anything going against Green Bay, they're fine. They're like, we're not even supposed to be here. Meanwhile, like the Packers had had no adversity for 2 months.
Also, the Bengals played the Packers and the Chiefs. Two games that came down to the last moment. Two other highly situational football games.
Yeah.
So I absolutely, now in college, it doesn't work that way because it really comes down to, because the NFL is so parity driven that situational football is really essential. It's not in college. The best teams are usually miles ahead of everybody except maybe one team in their conference.
But where it does apply to college is that a team that maybe doesn't have as good of a regular season but survives the SEC can be far more prepared for a postseason than a team that runs over the Pac-12 and plays one, you know, top 12 team all season, top 10 team all season. And I think we've seen that in college football where it's like, okay, oh, this team's undefeated out of a weaker conference, and maybe a two-loss Alabama actually is far better than them and far more ready for those big games.
I had a sports writer friend years ago, and I had this conversation. I said, he was too good for the market he was in. And I've bounced everywhere, so you can guess. And I said, the truth is, you're not challenged in this market. If you went to a Los Angeles Times or New York, you have the writing in you, but it's too easy here for you. It's a series of layups, and you hit one out of the park about once a month. You'd have to hit one out of the park once a week to be recognized in Philadelphia, New York. So it's the same thing. When more is demanded of you situationally, on deadline, write a great column, game just ended, you know, you elevate yourself. You would be doing a show right now in Houston or Kansas City that would be great. But you're better today because you've been challenged. You've been on live TV.
100%. And that, you know, that's so funny you say that, because I act like I had that. I'll never forget it. I was 27 years old. I had just gotten engaged to my now wife, and Kansas City was offering me at the time more money than I ever, I don't mind saying the amount, more money than I ever could have imagined making in radio. They were offering me $100,000 a year. I was like, oh my God, I'm 27. They're offering me $100,000 to do radio in my hometown, and $100,000 in Kansas City is, I think, 3.7 million in Los Angeles. So it goes a long way. And I said, I don't know if I said this out loud or it was just internal. I was like, if I take this contract, I think I stay here forever. And I don't know if that would, like, listen, maybe that would have been a great life, would have been happier, but I could have had that job for 35 years and been on autopilot. You know what I mean? And like and there are some benefits to that. And instead, I moved to Texas, which I didn't even like, for a market that I didn't know, because it was like the next. I wanted to see how far, you know, I could push it. But there is an element of that 100% to what you're saying.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think it's really interesting, and it's one of the things that's always attracted me about you is that you make me think. I've made this argument forever. Ben Shapiro and Bill Maher, I think, in their own right, are intellectuals. I think Rachel Maddow and Glenn Beck are storytellers. It doesn't really matter what side they're on. They've made me think. If you make
right, they've drawn you in.
Yeah. If you draw me in, I'm in. I don't have to agree with their ideology. But I think the first time I heard your tape, it was about 90 seconds. I listened. You were telling a story, and I was like, oh yeah, that's. I'm listening. Like, this is interesting. And I listened to 90 seconds, and then I told a mutual friend of ours, I said, yeah, I'd go hire him, because ESPN wanted you. And he said, we have one in. He listened to you. So if you
Reached out to me.
Yeah.
So you reached out to me. And so, then my life's changed ever since.
Yeah. So I think one of the it's a really interesting topic, and it's stuff I think of it goes to something, you know, I'll give you an example of something that I think about all the time. So I called Rick Spielman today, a general manager formerly of the Vikings. And I said, okay, I just want to pretend I'm drafting. I think the Iowa center is the second best player in the draft. Why can't I draft him? I said, intellectually, it's a vital position, closest to the ball, smartest player. It is physically demanding. And he said, oh, you could. He said, I would rather trade down and get him at 8 or 12 than 2. Yeah. Then I called Tom Telesco of the Chargers. And I posed the same. I do this. I just called and said, why can't I draft a center at 2 if he's the second best player? And he goes, you know what's funny? He said, 5 years ago, and I said, you're crazy. He said, but the game is so fast now. He goes, I just went and got Cole Linsley. I never thought I'd pay a center that. He's been worth every penny. See, as Absolutely. The game becomes faster, more at the line of scrimmage, you need cognitively very smart people around the ball. Center, quarterback, Mike linebacker, safety.
By the way, that's been one of the kind of underrated stories of this Chiefs season is their rookie center is maybe the best center in football as a rookie.
Yes.
Mid-round pick. Like what they were able to do in the draft, because everyone knows they signed Joe Tooney, they traded for Orlando Brown, but then they draft the kid Trey Smith. I knew nothing about him. He evidently was going to be a first-round pick.
Yes.
But had a serious medical issue that people thought he would never be able to play football, not allowed to play football. The Chiefs, you know, people cleared him. They got him in the 6th round. He's awesome. Creed Humphrey's excellent. So, like, that's been the only way you can get away with paying, having what's going to soon be a probably overpaid left tackle, the highest paid guard in the league, or one of them in Tooney, is if you then have two guys that are essentially free as your next two offensive linemen. So you have to nail those picks. Can I ask you one other thing that I brought up on your TV show today? But there is an alternative. So we were talking about the overtime stuff. You and I agree that you have to take into account injury, fatigue. You also have to take into account the goal is to win in regulation. So once you don't achieve that goal, fairness is not quite as important. Like there is going to be some variance. Okay. So I mentioned the, you know, one team spots the ball, the other team chooses
right.
who gets the ball. That's something the NFL has considered before it got voted down. Our mutual friend Danny Parkins came up with his own idea that I thought was fascinating. Now, maybe this is too nerdy for you, but tell me what you think. Both teams put in basically a silent bid. I am willing to start with the ball on this yard line.
Yeah.
And whichever team has the lower number gets the ball. So if the Chiefs come in and say that you don't get, it's not back and forth. They each, you know what I mean? Each tell an official, we are willing to start with the ball at the 12. If Buffalo, you know, has said they'll do 15, the Chiefs get the ball. If Buffalo's like, no, we'll take it at the 2. We'll go 98 yards. We just don't want you to get the ball. Whoever is willing to go further ends up with the football. What do you think of that one?
It's a little covert, and I worry about people saying if a team got the ball, there was confusion. I like stuff that's very public, so the audience can see it, the fans can see it. It's a little Dungeons and Dragons. It feels like it's down in somebody's basement. There's a covert. It's got a CIA.
That's fair. All right, let me ask you another one then. And this was someone on NFL Network suggested this. Seems incredibly basic. No change at all to the rules. The only difference is this. The coin flip for overtime happens before the game. So you play the whole game knowing who won that coin flip. So you know if it goes to overtime, am I getting the ball? Am I not getting the ball? What do you think of that?
As long as you announce it before the game, I'm for it.
Yes. Yeah, you announce it. Everyone knows that by you can do two coin flips. This is for the opening game. By the way, if the game goes to overtime, we're doing it right now. So everybody knows, because that would also impact strategy. That would totally impact end-of-game strategy on, am I going to kick a field goal to tie it? Well, maybe not. If I know I'm not getting the ball, maybe I'll be more aggressive.
Yeah, so this has always been my theory. Road team gets the choice first. And the reason I do it is if you can't win at Arrowhead after 13 possessions, they get it first. But it would also force, not in this time, in this instance, it would force teams often to be more aggressive with their last possession. Yep. Which I think makes the quality of regulation better. I think, listen, I don't think what we saw is an American tragedy. I think college football's overtime is silly. They take out special teams. Okay, think about special teams. The Packers are not playing in the NFC Championship because of special teams.
College football's overtime, to me, would be this. It is no different than if in the NBA they just said, we're going to play horse. We're like, it's kind of like basketball, but it's not.
Right.
It doesn't just take out special teams. It also, if you're a team who is an entire utility is, we have a defense that doesn't let you move an inch. Well, the other team is starting in field goal range. I hate college. The folks that are like, college football is the perfect overtime.
Oh.
Well, there's a lot of things would be fun. Having Mahomes and Allen, you know, do the old, I've said this to you before, the quarterback challenge. They throw balls with paint on them to targets. That'd be fun. It'd be interesting. But it's not goddamn football.
Right.
Like, I don't like the college football overtime at all. Yeah. And by the way, I do think this, the Chiefs, is a good example that, you know, things eventually even out. 2 years that, you know, Mahomes, two overtimes. One, he didn't touch the ball and lost. One, he did touch the ball and won. Like, it evens out. It doesn't always even out, but at least for the Chiefs, it has, it would appear.
NFL playoffs are in full gear, and everybody can get in on the action with a risk-free bet on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or if you already have an account. All customers get up to $10 back if your same-game parlay doesn't win. Okay, same-game parlays let you combine multiple bets from one matchup for a big payout. Bet a little, win a lot. You can combine bets on the money line, point spread, player stats, and so much more. I like FanDuel Sportsbook, number one sportsbook, easy to use, safe and secure, payouts within 2 hours. If you already have an account, just place your risk-free same-game parlay on any conference championship game to qualify. New customers, join today. Please use the promo code Colin. Okay, that's going to give you the risk-free bet. Plus, if you're a first-time betting with FanDuel, 30-1 odds on any team in the conference championship to win. Again, code Colin. 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia or West Virginia. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Same game parlay available for multiple sports in all states on mobile/web. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Jersey, and Virginia. Or call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. Tennessee Red Line is 1-800-889-9789. Or go to 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. So here, I'll throw something. People are, you're not, and I'm not. You really lean into it, and I just don't care. On Twitter, you'll throw out thought bubbles. And and you really play Twitter the way it should be played. I use it more in marketing. You use it more as a...
I use it to kind of stir things up a bit, throw things out there.
Yeah, you're the pot
tweak
stir.
Tweak people a bit.
I'll throw this at you. Brady retires in 2 weeks. Aaron Rodgers says, I want out. So Devontae Adams is out. Aaron agrees to Tampa. Green Bay says, we want Mike Evans. We're not losing Devontae and getting nobody. Tampa needs to cut money because Brady's contract has a punitive salary cap hit if he doesn't play, plus Aaron's salary cap. The Packers get Mike Evans and JPP, but they've been looking for an edge rusher for years. Between the two, it's $30 some million of salary. Green Bay gets JPP, Mike Evans, two firsts, up to three if Aaron plays a third year, which has always been something you've talked about. Two guaranteed, up to three if he plays a third year. If he retires after two, you get two minimum, even if he retired after a year. Three if he stays for three. Jordan Love plays. With Aaron's contract out, you have a little more wiggle room, plus drafting to make a better roster, still the best in division, and competes with Chicago to win it. Aaron goes on and dominates the NFC South.
What's going to be the worst of it with Sean Payton out gone? That's going to be the worst division in football by a mile. It's going to be a terrible division.
So it work if you can make it work financially, Green Bay would obviously not like to send him to an NFC team. But Tampa, think about this. The Steelers and the Broncos are maybe better fits, right, for the Packers and the AFC. But both organizations have sharp GMs and sharp front offices. They're not willing to roll the dice on Aaron with his seemingly endless retirement talk. Tampa does not have that infrastructure. They just like winning. They just flew a private
Tampa
jet.
No, Tampa would do it. Tampa 100% would do it. That's the my question to you is this, though, because you do seem to have a good line on how Aaron Rodgers ticks. I would think the last thing he would want to do is go to the place Brady just won at, because it's very hard to be like, can't win here. It's very hard to be like, it's not my fault when Tom just did it.
Okay, here.
Right?
But if he goes to the NFC North and is overshadowed by Burrow.
The AFC, sure.
Or to the AFC West and is overshadowed by Mahomes and Herbert. But we know he'll be at least as good or better than Tom, who was 44. So it looks better imaging. Hey, he's as good or better than Tom.
Well, I think the idea of going to the AFC West is insane. It would be if Derek Carr is the far and away worst quarterback in a division, it's the greatest division of quarterbacks ever, right? Like, I mean, Mahomes, Herbert would be the third best quarterback in the division. Then it's like it's impossible. So it just seems like that would be a very audacious move to go to the AFC West with Herbert and Mahomes already there.
And the reason I think it's possible, because Denver's got world championships several, and so do the Steelers. The retirement talk, I've been told this by somebody in the league, the retirement talk, Aaron talked about it in August, December, and yesterday on Pat McAfee's YouTube show.
I know.
It's turning people off. People are like, I'm not giving you up 3 first-round picks and 3 players. You could leave for Jeopardy in a year. It's turning people off in the league.
Well, the Steelers, to me, though, Tomlin can deal with a lot, man. Tomlin kept AB fine. We didn't know what a disaster he was. Big Ben's not exactly easy. Big Ben also is a guy that loves the spotlight. Was doing the weekly radio show. Did the retirement, not retire. And I think, you know, remember the Steelers? They traded a first round pick for a safety the year Big Ben got hurt. That's how much they want to win. Then Big Ben out for the year. We Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph. We'll trade you our first round pick, going to be the best first round pick we've had in 10 years, for Minka Fitzpatrick, because we want to win now.
Yes.
I think there is, personally, the Steelers is the one that makes the most sense to me. Tampa, I had not considered. Also, because do you think Tom's retiring?
I think it's the closest he's been. And another reason, Aaron is smart enough to know that the lack of competition in the NFC North, like Brady in the AFC East, is why he keeps playing home playoff games. That division is going to be so bad if Brady retires. It's a layup.
Bad. It's so bad. Can I talk about the Brady retirement thing with you for a moment? Because I tried to do this on television, but it's there are certain topics that if you don't get exactly right, you're just going to get excoriated for. And it was too. I didn't want to get it wrong in the small bits of television. But I think you and I can talk about it. So to me, it's pretty clear Tom wants to keep playing football, and that if he doesn't, it's because his wife and his kids don't want him to. Right? Like that he wants to play. All right. So here's the thing that I'm pondering here. I understand everyone has responsibility to their family. I get that. If you are the family of someone who is literally in the discussion for the greatest in the history of the world at something, do you have a responsibility to them that is different than if dad's seventh in command at the local electronics store and he works 80 hours a week? Is there not an element of, listen, being the family or the kids or whatever of Tom Brady has a lot of awesome stuff that comes with it. One negative thing is he might be so locked in and dedicated to the field that there's time you don't get with him. By the way, he'll still retire 50 years younger than 20 years younger than most people retire if he retires at 45. I feel funny about this idea that a guy who might be the greatest football player ever is going to walk away before he wants to, not because he can't play anymore, not because he's not great, but because the people he loves want him to. Like, I don't know. I'm not exactly saying it right, but it feels weird to me. Like Tom Brady owes it to himself to do exactly what he wants to write the final chapter of his football life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Tom said the other day to Jim Gray, he said, "It pains Giselle when I get hit." He did not say, "It pains Giselle when I go to practice or watch film." She doesn't want to see her husband get hurt. That's the issue. The time away, I don't think, you know, I say this all the time. You know, my wife and I will talk about this. I'm like, if you consider, you know, how well I've done financially, generally you have to fly globally or fly 200 days a year to do as well as I do. I'm like, I'm home at noon every
Correct.
Single day. So
Correct.
If you look
and at football players have 5 months a year.
Yes. Off. Yes.
That's the thing is I'm sure during the season he's a pain in the ass. Like, you know, and I'm sure and I say that lovingly and I'm sure that there are things he misses. But it also is a job that February to July, you have essentially as much free time as you want. And it is not the traveling thing's exactly right. This is not a. Oh, I'm missing everything because I commute to Zurich. That's not what's happening here.
Right.
And so I don't know. I didn't like when I listened to Brady, I felt badly for him in this regard, which is we all understand the push and pull between work and life and family. And he mentioned, you know, the stuff with Kobe that, of course, made us all kind of take a moment and say, are we putting the most important things first? All of that. I get that. But there is also, to me, something when you are not just a pro athlete, but someone that might be the greatest ever at something. I really just feel like you should be able to do it on your own terms and that the people closest to you will understand.
Well, that's why, you know, they say behind every great success, every man, there's a great woman. So I think Giselle is really capable, really smart. Really international, really a great mom.
Come on, Zay,
she can handle it. I remember years ago, I had this discussion with somebody I worked with at the other network, ESPN. And we were talking about George Bodenheimer. And there was a big emergency at ESPN or something. You know, somebody, I don't know, it was a controversy or something. And I said, your wife has to understand, it's an understanding in the family, like, unless your life is in jeopardy, there are going to be moments every year, a dozen, where the job comes first. It will
of
take
course.
Precedence over the family.
I tried to talk about this on TV, and I felt like, man, I'm gonna come across like a shitty dad. Or I absolutely, and here's the other thing I said is this. His kids are 9, 12, 14, I think.
Yeah.
Kid, when they are older, they will get it. Let me tell you something. I've talked with you a little bit about my father. My dad was a workaholic.
Yeah.
And he was not Tom Brady, but he thought his job, he thought he has a calling, he would tell you. Like,
yeah.
This is what I was put on this earth to do, is to fight for the firefighters of Kansas City, Missouri. That's my job, to make sure they are taken care of, to make sure they have health benefits, to make sure they have the best working conditions. Like, that is what he dedicated his life to. And he missed a lot of stuff. And as a kid, did it piss me off? It kind of did. And then I got to be an adult and I felt like I had a calling, not one nearly as important, by the way, to the world as his, just something I must do. And you know what I did? I moved to Los Angeles with my family in Houston for a year and a half, commuted back and forth. Will I ever get that time back with my daughters, with my son? I won't. Do I regret it? No, because it not only was what I needed to do in order to be having this conversation with you, in order to have my career, but it also, I am the adult that, like, in the family, I have to recognize I might have to sacrifice some things that I will miss
sure.
because of what it will allow me to do for you in the future as my kids. Now, I get it. If you're Brady, you've already made so much money. You're that, like, that check has already been, you know, that box has already been checked. I think this idea that it is outrageous that people would say, no, listen, there's a lot of times in life that the job does come first. Like, it's very few people that are get anywhere close to the top of any field that can't do it. Now, if Brady wants to say, I don't want to do that anymore, God bless him. But what is shocking to me about the retirement talk is this. Tom Brady has achieved literally every goal he ever set out.
Yeah.
Even the ones that seemed impossible. He set out one that seemed impossible. I want to play until I'm 45. He is 1 year away. He's 2 years removed from a Super Bowl. This year, he almost won MVP. He's going to stop a year short. I think that causes, if I'm being honest, resentment,
yeah,
bitterness. I think there's a lot of stuff, like, I don't know. I hope he finishes. I hope he plays.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a right answer. I think a lot of this stuff is communication with your wife, with your kids. So, you know, Ann and I talk about this stuff all the time and where we want to be 5 years down the road, what we want to be doing. And I'll give you an example. I'm certainly not an expert on this, but my kids have moved around a lot because of my career. Now, we've had certain things available to us that have been really advantageous. Private schools, incredible vacations, access to things we would never have without me, Dad's job, right?
Income.
So yep. we go back and forth. And what I just try to do is communicate and talk to my kids and what bothers you and how do you feel. I can remember when I got a divorce, I monitored my daughter's grades. I talked to her counselors. How is it affecting her? I had these open conversations. I went to a lot of therapy. And so I wanted to see how it affected her. And I was very fortunate. My ex and I, it was a very amicable split. And so there was no hostility, but it was, it's a work, it's a fluid situation. And I think my kids have come out of it really well. I don't think there's a right answer. Somebody will listen to this and who's not as ascending or doesn't have a great career aspirations and will think we're the cold hearted, horrible parents. And then some trial attorney who's a great dad will listen to it and go, I've been in that space. So I feel like I have missed out on some things because of my job, but I've also been able to experience things with my children I could have not experienced if I had not.
Right. The access and things like that are obviously important. But the argument against it with Brady is if he would have stopped 3 years ago, the money is endless. The fame and access, all that's endless. But there is, you know, we're going down a deep rabbit hole or whatever. I remember my mom was the most selfless person she's still with us. I've ever met. And there was like, she never, ever, ever put herself first. And she had a high level job. But I remember vividly as a kid once, I think I was being a total brat right around Christmas time. I remember it vividly. She looked at me and she said, Nick, it's everyone's Christmas, not just yours. And that always resonated with me because I was like, as a kid, you don't always think about that. Like, Christmas is supposed to be fun for the parents too. The reason I bring that up is this. Even when you're a parent, you're still like, there's still an element of when you live your life, there should be some math of what makes me happy. What do I want to do?
Right.
Like, there has to be an element. It can't just always be once again, it's your responsibility to take care of the kids, make sure they have the things they need. But then there's in the margins. And I do think that it is different. If you are someone that is one of the greatest ever at something.
Yeah.
It is more reasonable to put that your field, you know, high on the priority list than if you're, you know, the executive vice president of a widget company. And it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm an asshole for it. And I know we got other stuff to talk about, but I firmly believe that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Giselle, the resentment would be Giselle thinking, hey, pal, I was a supermodel and gave up more money than you.
That's a good point. That's a good point because she did it. That would be the argument is I was the Tom Brady of supermodeling and I stopped. You won't ever stop. That is a good point. You know, that is a really good point because she is like, there is a whole element of it's not the typical superstar athlete family where the husband is the breadwinner by a
right.
million
she
miles.
She made more than him.
She made more.
She did.
It's so wild. It's so wild. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't think the kids would have the resentment. I think they'd love dad. I think... you know, recently I moved into a house and this is on me. It did not have an art studio for my wife. It had this broadcasting area. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the house served so many needs for us that we really liked. And my wife, I found it and then I showed my wife and she loved it. But neither of us in the purchase thought about how important a studio of art is for my wife. And I feel bad. This is something that I'm trying to solve right now. So yeah. I find in my life, my kids understand dad's busy and understand dad can't be there for everything, but I better make my wife happy. And if I F that up, I'm in big trouble.
Of course, which is, you know, my takeaway from that story is Colin's about to have to buy one of his neighbor's houses. Going to be two house guys, same block. Why do you have two houses? I fucked this up. I didn't have a studio for my wife, so now I have two houses. Two house in Brentwood guy.
Good okay, life. Let me think. I don't have anything else, to be honest with you. I like just talking about this. I don't think we need to talk about anything else. I don't think we have to talk
about anything.
No, listen,
I think we did good. You once again have managed to do this whole podcast without talking about how great Mahomes is. That's fine. You know, just maybe by his, you know, third Super Bowl, we can do a podcast on him. Go ahead. Yeah.
I will say, the things that attract Mahomes to me are not the things that attract perhaps Mahomes to you. What I think is his greatest gift is his ability to disarm people. He disarms the media. He disarms teammates. He is America's greatest football talent, and you would never know it. He has a really incredibly engaging and welcoming personality. And I think that's important. Brady has done this for years. Rookies come in and he goes, hi, I'm Tom Brady.
I'm Tom. Yeah.
And that's
it's great.
It's a really smart move.
I got something on Mahomes that I don't think did you see the heart rate thing?
Yes.
It came out a couple hours ago. Okay. So if people don't know, he wears a heart rate monitor during the game. And I thought this was one of the most fascinating things. I feel like you could do an hour on this alone. So they monitor his heart rate the whole game. His heart rate repeatedly was the highest when he didn't have the ball. And his heart rate dropped the lowest while he was playing. So he is at his calmest when he's the one in control. The only time during this game where his heart rate showed he was under severe stress or anxiety was when he couldn't control the situation. When he's watching the Bills, the fact that that was true even on the 13 seconds left drive is a remarkable thing. It is a remarkable thing. And you could see it on his face. That to me was as impressive as any throw he made. I knew that when the Bills scored in the minute 54 left, I knew he felt fine. Like, oh, this is, thank God you didn't take more time. I'm down three. I have all three timeouts. I have 2 minutes. We're fine. When the Bills scored with 13 seconds left, and I'm sitting here, and my son's watching the game with me, and he's lying to me, saying, there's still time, just because I'm beside myself. I couldn't believe they had blown it. They showed Mahomes, and he just casually took his jacket off and started throwing. And it's like he really did believe, okay, what are you, 13 to two plays? We got a chance. Like, we got a chance. That to me is, as you know, I'm so young. I didn't watch Montana's career. You know, honest to God, I have 1 year of my football watching life of Montana as a 49er. One. And then he went to the Chiefs. Like, so I don't remember how cool Montana was, but that's what everybody always says, that Montana was like that. Brady obviously has been like that. But this is Mahomes is a different animal in the regard of this. To have that coolness, that clutch, that ability, and he is such a better athlete than Montana or Brady ever dreamt of being. You mentioned Elway. Elway's a good example. Elway was stronger than Mahomes, but Elway's a great athlete. You know what I mean? It's Steve Young. Those guys are great athletes. Mahomes has that level of athleticism to go with everything else. It's really unbelievable. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and Aaron Rodgers wears that same device, and it peaks when he's watching my show.
I'm sorry. You're funny, man. No, it's good. Listen, Aaron, I know it is probably going too long. Just 2 minutes on Rodgers, then we can go. Is that cool?
Yes.
I really don't like the victimhood that he is. So
exhausting,
nauseating. And it is, to me, so detached from not only are like his facts and figures on vaccines and COVID detached from reality, his analysis of, like, he has been, remember when he did the foot press conference and he was loud about this person wrote the article, fake news, bad journalism, and the person who saw him out didn't write the article? It was a different reporter. To be that loud and that wrong about something that basic and not publicly apologize, maybe privately did, I don't know, not publicly apologize. And then to come out and be like, the whole world was rooting for me because they're rooting against me. Yeah, man, because you have been intentionally provocative. You have been you can't wade into these waters intentionally, knowingly, smugly. And then it would have been, could you imagine, this is the analogy I was trying to bring up on their show today. If after the Chiefs lost, if I went on TV, if they had lost to the Bills, if I went on TV and I was like, I got to tell you guys, I think it's outrageous the things Bills fans are saying to me on Twitter. What? I've been an asshole to them for 2 years. I've been daring them to do it. Like, there is an element of, like, if you are to cross-pollinate a bit, I think if people are mean on Twitter to Scott Van Pelt, they're probably just assholes. Because Scott is in our business, but doesn't do, especially since he left radio, he doesn't give controversial opinions. He seems incredibly likable. He does SportsCenter. He's always smiling. He's nice. He's nice online. When people are mean to you or me, I'm usually like, yeah, probably it's probably fair. Like, you know what I mean? I prefer not some of it. But like we're
provocative.
Engender that.
Yeah.
We're provocative people. And so like, it is so baffling to me. Like, at least Baker doesn't whine about it. Like, Baker knows that people are going to come after him. I think he wants people to, and he like tries to use it as fuel. Maybe it doesn't work. But for Aaron to do this woe is me stuff, I think is unbecoming. I think it's really unbecoming.
Well, and also, Russell Wilson, Brady, Peyton Manning, Mahomes, Josh Allen keep illustrating and telling you how much they love the game. Aaron
Yes.
is constantly reminding you he could leave it tomorrow and be totally happy. It's called projecting. When you have to remind me that you don't need something, you need something.
But even, by the way, even if it's not projecting, even if it's totally true, it's terrible marketing. It's like, this is a sport where you have 80,000 people in 0-degree weather paying money to be in that environment. I'm going to pay hundreds or thousands of dollars to sit in the cold, in the snow, to cheer for you. That's how much I care about it. I'm going to build my Sundays around it. That's how much I care about it. You don't want to hear from the star players, I could take it or leave it. Even if it's true, it's just terrible. Again, I'll just use our business. The number one thing you probably used to hear, maybe you still do, is people say, oh my God, you have the dream job. Like, oh my God, I wish I could do what you do for a living. You get to talk about sports for a living. Do you think people would find you or me as relatable or as likable if we were regularly being like, let me tell you something, I don't really love the gig that much. Like, I'm really more into like art and sculpting. Like, I do it because I'm good at it and it pays well. But yeah, kind of bores me. People be like, man, bleep you. I'd kill for that job. Like, you just eat. And by the way, there have probably been times in your career where maybe you have needed a new challenge. Maybe it did bore you. You're like, okay, I've kind of mastered this part of it. But you wouldn't tell people that.
Right.
You, not publicly. It's just, I don't know. The fact that Rodgers has gone from the public, like, a Q rating or whatever that he had 9 months ago to this without there being a crime committed is unprecedented.
Yeah.
It's unprecedented for someone's public image to go through this without there being some massive scandal.
Yeah. Listen, you can't rip the president, Fauci, the vaccine, the media, and think there'll be absolutely no blowback.
Yeah, that's not even, what are we talking about? It's so nuts. It's such a, it's, and that's the thing is, it, and I always worry, like, this is the thing with people and that Kyrie, and this is not a vaccine thing with Kyrie, people that are smart-ish, that think they're brilliant, usually end up sounding incredibly dumb, way dumber than the dumb guy who knows he's not that bright. So he's like, I'm not really going to talk about all this stuff. Like, do I think Aaron Rodgers has a higher IQ than Travis Kelce?
Yeah,
I do. But guess what? Travis Kelce's doing dating shows and making jokes and catching footballs and having fun. He's not trying to tell you, hey, here's my Ayn Rand book. Shut up, Atlas Lost. Shut up with your Atlas Shrugged nonsense. You, of all the books you could show on the Manning Cast, you show maybe the most politically charged novel ever. Like the novel that made a whole generation of wannabe Reagan conservatives. That's your book. You're like, oh, but I'm apolitical. You'd say like Biden, how could he still be president without he publicly speak? What are you talking about, buddy? And by the way, you can say, you can have all those opinions, but you can't have all those opinions and be like, why is everyone rooting against me? So stupid. It's just so ridiculous. Okay, I'm done. That was my
well,
2 minutes.
I don't read Atlas Shrugged. I read Andy Reid Shrugged. Because that was his reaction when he had 13 seconds left. He looked at Mahomes. He went,
what are you going to do?
Go win the game.
All right, that one, you had a great line to close the podcast 15 minutes ago. I wouldn't let you do it. I had more things to say. That one we can close with. This was fun, Colin.
All right, buddy. See you later.
See ya.
Volume.